Welcome to today's Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American, read by volunteers at the Recording Library of West Texas. This production is also available at recordinglibrary.org and on the telephone reader by calling 432-617-5555.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Friday, January 31st, 2020. Ticket Weekend Entertainment Guide for the Permian Basin. On exhibit, the Ellen Noel Art Museum, 4909 East University Boulevard, continues the exhibit Sacred Scripts, 1,000 Years of Religious Texts. Visit noelartmuseum.org for more information. Simply Shrimply, Shrimp Fest, a benefit for the Ellen Noel Art Museum, is scheduled February 24th at the Ector County Coliseum. Enjoy a Cajun-style celebration with unlimited shrimp, music, and auction. General admission includes food and two drink tickets. Sponsored tables are also available. For more information, call the museum at 432-550-9696 or visit noelartmuseum.org. Little Shop. The Permian Playhouse's first show of 2020 will be Little Shop of Horrors, February 21st to March 1st. Visit permianplayhouse.com for more on the show and the 2020 season at the theater. Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Friday, January 31st, 2020. Obituaries and Death Notices. Obituaries. Elfita Garcia Leyva, Odessa, Texas. Elfita G. Leyva, 71, of Odessa, went to be with the Lord on Tuesday, January 28, 2020, at her residence in Odessa, Texas. Viewing will be held Thursday, January 30, 2020, from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., with a prayer service starting at 7 p.m. Friday, January 31, 2020, from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., with a rosary at 7 p.m. Funeral services will be held at 10 a.m. on Saturday, February 1, 2020, at Impact City Church, with Pastor Ralph Emerson officiating. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery, Odessa 2 section. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory. Elfita was born in Monahans, Texas, to Francisco and Dominga Sanchez on May 18, 1948. Elfita is preceded in death by her parents, brothers Joe Sanchez and Pablo Gomez, daughter Lisa M. Garcia, one grandchild, baby Gail, and one great-grandchild, baby Ramos. Elfita is survived by her husband, Guillermo H. Leyva, her children, Mary Ann Garcia, Oscar Hernandez Jr., Amanda, Sandra Gail, Fernando, Guillermo Willie Leyva Jr., Ana Alicia, and Jeremy Ray Leyva, 8 sisters, 3 brothers, 15 grandchildren, and 16 great-grandchildren. Brandon and Catherine Ortega, Odessa. Celebrating the lives of Catherine Lynn Davis Ortega and Brandon Ortega. Catherine was born November 3, 1977, to Greta Deanne Vaughn and Roger John Davis in Bakersfield, California. Brandon was born November 29, 1978, in Andrews, Texas, to Armando Ortega and Benita Gideon Harville. Catherine and Brandon finished their journey in this life on January 25, 2020. They were proud parents of 3 beautiful children, Chastity Hernandez, Christian Ortega, and Sierra Ortega, and grandparents to Weston and Sage. Catherine is survived by her parents, Roger Davis and Greta Vaughn, and brother Richard Roberts, three nieces and one nephew, and grandmother. Brandon is survived by his father, Armando Ortega, and stepmother, Shanna Ortega, mother Benita Harville and stepfather Terry Harville, three sisters, Jenna Ortega, Brittany Ortega, and Andrea Ortega, three brothers, Edgar Ortega, Cody Ortega, and Clay Ortega, uncle, Buford Dale Gideon Jr., numerous aunts, uncles, cousins, one great-grandmother, grandparent, nieces, and nephews. Catherine is preceded in death by Barbara Elliott, James Benson, Papa Stan, Uncle Buddy, Billy Ray, Shirley Ann Mitchell, and Jim Davis. Brandon is preceded in death by Grandmother Norma Brandenburg and Grandfather Buford Dale Gideon. Visitation will be 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Friday, January 31st, 2020, at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home Chapel. Funeral services will be 1 p.m. Saturday, February 1st, 2020, at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home Chapel, with Pastor Pedro Pondo officiating. To send family condolences, please sign their guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Death notices. Louis Wayne Daniels, Midland. Louis Wayne Daniels, 76, of Midland, died Friday, January 24th, 2020, in Midland. Memorial service will be held at 10 a.m. February 1st, 2020, American Heritage Funeral Home in Midland. Paige Daniels is officiating. Brenda Lee Turner Ellis, Odessa. Brenda Lee Turner Ellis, 58, of Odessa, died Tuesday, January 28, 2020, in Odessa. Celebration of life will be held at 5 to 9 p.m. Friday, January 31st, 2020, Acres West Funeral Chapel. Sabrina Diane Tinney Gant, Odessa. Sabrina Diane Tinney Gant, 61, died Tuesday, January 28, 2020, in Odessa. Services are pending with Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Jimmy Jimbo Olivares, Big Spring. Jimmy Jimbo Olivares, 55, of Big Spring, died Monday, January 27th, 2020, in Big Spring. Funeral service will be held at 2 p.m., January 31st, 2020, Nellie Pickle and Welch Rosewood Chapel. Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Friday, January 31st, 2020, local and state. State News Roundup. Houston Area College lifts lockdown after nearly 3 hours. Kingwood. A Houston Area Community College was cleared after a nearly three-hour lockdown Thursday, during which police escorted students and staff off campus but found no evidence of a shooting or casualties, officials said. Officers from several law enforcement agencies combed Lone Star College's large Kingwood campus, but have found no shooter, Harris County Sheriff Ed Gonzalez said on Twitter. No injuries have been reported. The college issued a warning to people on campus to go to the nearest room and lock the door around 1:40 p.m. This is not a drill, lock down now, stated the directive on its website. By 3 p.m., police completed their room-by-room clearing of the school buildings and escorted all students and staff off campus, according to a statement from the college. The school gave the all-clear around 4:30 p.m. and said the campus will remain closed for the rest of Thursday. Gonzalez said the report of a possible shooter came from third-party caller. The Lone Star College Police Department did not immediately respond to a request for more information. Oil well blowout kills one worker, injures three others. Brian. One worker was killed and three others were injured Wednesday during the blowout of a Central Texas oil well. All four were contractors working at a Chesapeake Energy well site on a county road near Deanville, Texas, 28 miles southwest of Bryan, when flames erupted from the wellhead about 3:30 p.m., Chesapeake spokesman Gordon Penoyer said in an email. A blowout is an eruption of oil or gas from the wellhead that can erupt in flames if there is an ignition source, such as a spark. The Associated Press. Fifth Annual Mental Health Conference set. OA News at OAOA.com. Midland ISD, the Midland ISD Education Foundation, and Chevron are teaming up again this year to host the fifth annual Permian Basin Mental Health Conference today in the Fellowship Hall of First Baptist Church, 2104 West Louisiana Avenue in Midland. Ector County ISD Executive Director of Guidance and Counseling Nancy Vanley said she and a few of the other district counselors plan to attend. This year's topic is Understanding Polyvagal Theory. The event draws counselors, therapists, and mental health providers from around the region, particularly those who work with children. This year's keynote speaker is Dr. George Thompson, Chief Medical Officer at Kids TLC, a child behavioral health agency in the greater Kansas City area. Thompson will talk about polyvagal theory, which explains the relationship between the autonomic nervous system and social behavior. The Mental Health Conference will take place at First Baptist Church of Midland's Fellowship Hall, which is located on the Cuthbert Avenue portion of the facility. The gathering starts with registration and breakfast at 8:30 a.m. Opening remarks are at 9 a.m. 9:30 a.m. is the keynote speaker. 11:30 a.m. is lunch, and breakout sessions start at 1 p.m. On the net, tinyurl.com/u5walok. Concert will aid oil workers. Randy Rogers Band, Hamilton's on the ticket for March event. OA News at OAOA.com. Oilfield Helping Hands will host the second annual Black Gold Bash benefit concert in Midland in March. OHH and Roseland Oil and Gas are holding the event, and it features the Randy Rogers Band and the Hamiltons on March 25th at the Midland County Horseshoe Amphitheater. A VIP dinner with the Hamiltons performing begins at 6 p.m., and the doors open at 7 p.m., with the Randy Rogers Band on at 8 p.m. General admission tickets are $30 if purchased in advance, or $40 at the door. Oilfield Helping Hands is a nonprofit organization established in Houston in 2003. OHH helps oilfield families in financial crisis. The organization has provided more than $5 million to industry workers and their families. OHH continues to work in the most economical fashion to maximize the funds available to recipients each year. Press materials from the group detailed. Bill Marcus, OHH National President, in a news release, said the Randy Rogers Band and the Hamiltons will deliver a fantastic evening of entertainment. We're encouraging everyone to come along and enjoy a great night out while doing their bit to raise funds for oilfield families in desperate need of financial aid. As a bonus, company sponsors of the event will enjoy a range of benefits, including parking lot signage setup, VIP access, and VIP parking. The Randy Rogers Band hails from San Marcos and is popular nationwide, but particularly in Texas. They have been active for 20 years and had a number of hits in the Billboard Top 40. The latest album by the band was Hellbent in 2019. The group's website has Rogers quoted as saying, "It is important, especially in today's day and age, not to put out content just for the sake of content. People see through that, and it's a big mistake young artists make just to put a video or a new song out just to have something to talk about," Rogers said on the website. "There is a lost art to making an entire album, being a cohesive unit, and have it be something that you can stand up and play. We have to record songs we can play live. 99% of the income we share is because we're playing a show, so those songs can't be throwaway songs." Rogers is also a big fan of collaboration and has partnered with friend Wade Bowen on the infectious Hold My Beer projects and joined forces with Lone Star legend Robert Earl Keane as the Stryker Brothers. He recently joined Lyle Lovett, Willie Nelson, and Jerry Jeff Walker to sing on Michael Martin Murphy's Austinology album. Event sponsors are being sought to help offset event expenses to allow maximum proceeds to be used to benefit oilfield families in financial crisis. Companies who wish to sponsor will be recognized several ways during the event and on the OHH website, and a variety of commitment levels are available. To purchase a table or for information about a sponsorship, contact Katie Grimes at katie.grimes@oilfieldhelpinghands.org or 512-635-2331. If you go, what? Oilfield Helping Hands concert with Randy Rogers Band and the Hamiltons. When? 6 p.m. March 25th. Where? Midland County Horseshoe Amphitheater. Tickets $30 in advance and $40 at the door. Visit oilfieldhelpinghands.org. Oilfield Helping Hands, oilfieldhelpinghands.org. The Hamiltons, philhamiltonmusic.com. Randy Rogers Band, randyrogersband.com. Enjoy Valentine's Day with dinner, music, and a show. Diners can request serenades for sweethearts. By Sam Waller, S-W-A-L-L-E-R at OAOA.com. West Texas Talent Entertainment is once again offering dinner and entertainment for Valentine's Day, scheduling two performances of an original work titled Shall We or This Is Not How It Happened in Sleepless in Seattle. The program is scheduled for 7 p.m. February 14th and 15th at Dee's Bistro and Grill, located at 622 North Lee Avenue. Tickets are $84.99 per couple and may be purchased online at west-texas-talent.ticketleap.com. Citing the venue's capacity of 54 patrons, West Texas Talent Entertainment Director Daniel Ryan advises purchasing tickets early. In addition to the meal and play, diners can also be serenaded at their tables. "This is our second year presenting a show, music, and dinner for Valentine's weekend," Ryan said. "We'll have a list of songs you can request be sung, either to your table or to your sweetheart from the list of singers. The theme is music from the movies, so most of the songs will be reflective of that. There will be newer songs to older sentimental songs." Following the buffet-style meal, which Ryan said would offer a selection of beef, fish, and chicken entrees, the show is scheduled to begin at 8:30 p.m. "It's a comedy show," Ryan said, "called Shall We? Or This Is Not How It Happened in Sleepless in Seattle. It's about Brenda, who has come to New York. Her parents have followed her. All she wants to do is meet her internet dream at the Empire State Building on Valentine's Day. This would be the first meeting, and of course none of it goes the way it's supposed to. The program is just one of several West Texas Talent Entertainment presents throughout the year, Ryan said. This is the only one where we do dinner and a show, he said. We do generally have a variety show about once a month. The first week of March, we'll have special guest star Julie McCullough. She's going to reprise her guest star role on The Golden Girls. It's not often that you'll find stars who will come and perform with you. They all want to do their own bit, but they won't necessarily play with you. It gives our actors an opportunity to work with somebody famous. Ryan said most of the performers are local. Providing music will be Kaylee Cochran, Tasha Bone, Sonia Cortez, Priscilla Hernandez, and Raina Ray. Cast members for the play are Hiram Flores, Kelsey Cowan, Mino Cortez, Ryan, Lori Norris, Sonia Cortez, and Karen Griffin. We're in our 11th year of presenting shows, Ryan said. For the first 10 years, we operated the West Texas Talent Search, so we'd find people locally in the area who had talent. Pretty much all the singers are left over from doing the talent search, so I know a lot of talented people that we have. The actors that we held auditions for just recently moved to town, so we added them to our troupe. While performing an original work for this program, Ryan said the company also counts established titles among its repertoire. We've done Will Success Spoil Rock Hunter, and then we did California Suite, he said. In California Suite, we had to change a little bit. The stage at D's is really small, and if you have four people on stage, it's crowded. We have to look for things that have just a few people. This one's an original. We do, I'd say, half and half. Generally, long plays are easier to find. For stuff like the sketches, one of the troupe will write that.
Hello, this is Sonia reading the Odessa American for Friday, January 31st, 2020. OA files lawsuit against City of Odessa. Public records must be released in timely manner by Laura Dennis. The Odessa American has filed a lawsuit against the City of Odessa to force the city to release public crime records in a timely manner and in accordance with state law. For months, the OA has battled the city to provide public documents to both the OA and the public that includes police reports and probable cause affidavits in a timely manner without redacting information that has always been considered public information under Texas law. The amount of information the city has been withholding from the public is appalling. The amount of information the city has been withholding from the public is appalling, said Attorney John Bussian, a media law specialist. All of this information has always been immediately available for review by the public and the media, and there is no legal or other justification for the city's changing course. Bussian said the unfortunate part of the OA enforcing the public records law is that the city ends up paying not only its own lawyers, but also the lawyers for those requesting the records. It's a waste of tax dollars. The city abruptly changed the traditional practice of releasing public crime information following the Odessa mass shooting on August 31, 2019, that ended with 7 people dead and 25 others wounded. Police reports from that shooting that were requested in the days following the shooting were only released late Monday. This is clearly illegal, and any citizen, not just members of the news media, should be outraged by this, OA publisher Patrick Canty said. When it comes to public records, Texas law makes it very clear that unless there are specific and limited circumstances, all of these records are presumed to be public and must be made available in a timely manner. The city has flipped that principle on its ear and has taken the exact opposite approach, making the news media and the public play a game of "Mether may I" to obtain in a timely manner documents that have always been obvious public information throughout this state and the rest of the country. The city is not our mother, and they have no legal or ethical right to demand anyone ask their permission. That information belongs to all of us. It was after the shootings that the city began to demand freedom of information requests for all probable cause affidavits and police reports, which violates the Texas Public Information Act, TPIA. Information that is always considered public does not require an FOI request, certainly not information that is covered under the TPIA. The change by the city resulted in reports on basic crimes to be delayed by days or weeks, and often with large portions of the reports blacked out. In the past, the Odessa American received requested police records from the municipal court and not the city attorney's office, and often had those records in a few hours and unredacted. The city attorney announced that no records would be released until they were vetted by lawyers for the city. During an early January meeting between OA staff, CBS 7 News Director Scott Pickey, City Attorney Natasha Brooks, Councilwoman Peggy Dean, Communications Director Devin Sanchez, and Bushin, the city officials asked for time to discuss the issue. In spite of the meeting, the city continues to require FOI requests and is delaying the release of the documents in question. But in a curious change of direction, when the OA finally receives the requested probable cause affidavits, they continue to have redactions, but fewer of them. After the city changed course, the OA asked to see the highly redacted affidavits again, and this time the city released those same affidavits with fewer redactions, showing that the city's original handling of the OA requests violated the TPIA. Still, the real problem for the public in accessing these city records is that these records have always been automatically available, mostly on the same day they are generated. This is not the first time the OA has taken the city of Odessa to task for violating Texas open government laws. In 2017, the OA sued the city for improperly holding executive sessions in violation of state open meetings laws. The city settled the lawsuit with the newspaper the following year, agreeing to pay $12,500 of the OA's legal expenses and to provide more transparency than even the current open meetings law requires. The city must now keep audio recordings of all closed-door meetings rather than notes. That was a landmark victory in Texas open government law battles and set the bar for all municipal governments to do a better job of being more accountable to the public, Beshin said. The current lawsuit seeks an order requiring immediate access to these records and access to records that haven't been redacted, and also seeks full reimbursement of the newspaper's legal expenses. This is all about transparent and responsible government, and the people's right to be informed in an objective and timely manner, Canty said. I get the impression that, at times, the city sees itself as a private business that is entitled to control its image and messaging to its customers. The problem is that they are not a private business, but public servants. They work for and serve the people of Odessa, who have a right to know the facts about the public goings-on in their community. When it comes to governmental entities, there's a fine line between PR and propaganda or censorship, and everyone should care about this case. Bushin agreed, adding, hopefully this will restore the public's right to know. Quick hits. Gun and Blade Show. The Silver Spur Gun and Blade Show has been scheduled from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday and from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Sunday at the Midland County Horseshoe Pavilion, 2514 Arena Trail. Admission is $7 for adults and free for 12 and under. Robotics Championship. The UT Permian Basin College of Engineering will have the 2020 First Tech Challenge Regional Robotics Championship Saturday at the UTPB Gym. Team check-in is at 7:30 a.m. 9 a.m. is inspections/team interviews, followed by the qualification round at 12:45 p.m. Elimination matches are at 6:30 p.m., and the awards and closing ceremony is at 7 p.m. This championship tests the autonomous and operated robots designed by students in grades 7 through 12. The designed robots will be tested by making them perform a series of tasks given by the organizers. The robots will be evaluated in the following categories: design, build, program, and test, a news release said. There will be 36 teams from around West Texas competing at the championship. The top four teams will go on to compete at the state-level meet. The public is invited to attend. Chili Cook-Off. Chapel Hill Baptist Church, 1820 East 52nd Street, has scheduled a Super Bowl Chili Cook-Off from noon to 1 p.m. Sunday. All proceeds go to Fight Hunger in Odessa and Ector County. Wear a jersey or t-shirt to support your favorite team. For more information, call 550-6080. Chili Bowl Contest. Belmont Baptist Church, 1200 West 8th Street, has scheduled its second annual Super Chili Bowl Contest from noon to 1 p.m. Sunday. Prizes will be awarded for the top three entries. First place, $100, second place, $50, and third place, $25. Admission is free. Sign up to compete. Call 332-0248.
Marfa's Blackwell School joins the National Register of Historic Places. By Abby Perot, ABBIE at BigBendSentinel.com. Marfa. Marfa's historic Blackwell School, a reminder of school segregation, received an honorific designation to the National Register of Historic Places for its significant contribution to the broad patterns of our history. According to the application approved by the National Parks Service on December 4th. The Blackwell School, built at the turn of the 20th century by Presidio County and the local school district, provided primary school education to Marfa's Hispanic children at 501 South Abbott Street in what is now South Central Marfa. Despite mandated segregation for African American students, there was never any national or state mandate to separate Hispanic students from their Anglo counterparts. Instead, the proliferation of segregation between those communities was de facto, mostly put into place by local school districts, and was not legally undone when the Supreme Court desegregated Anglo and African American students. Blackwell educated Marfa's Hispanic elementary and junior high students until 1965, when a new elementary school was constructed and Marfa's education system was integrated. Bonnie Wilson, a historian at the Texas Historical Commission who worked on the Blackwell application, says, "We did not look at this nomination as precedent-setting, and we recognized that this property is unique because it tells the story of Texas Hispanic children's education, which is not a topic that is often covered." Blackwell covers multiple underrepresented subjects: ethnicity, nationality, primary school education, and Marfa's location, Wilson says. It covers an uncommon combination of subjects compared to other designated historic places. Lionel Salgado attended Blackwell from 1941 to 1951, a time he recalls for its good education, good teachers, and good memories. But today, Salgado reflects on the school's legacy in Marfa and is troubled. "A lot of it has been ignored and forgotten, and more ignored than forgotten," Salgado says. "People, for some reason, don't want to think about it, but it's part of history. One thing I talk about is how burying our past hasn't worked," says Gretel Ink, president of the Blackwell School Alliance. Ink brought her background of nearly 20 years' experience working with the National Park Service to her role at the Alliance. Ink previously worked at the Manzanar National Historic Site, the location of America's Japanese internment camps during World War II. "I saw the power of that place being preserved and people being encouraged to tell their stories and really reclaim their voice around the violation of the Constitution that happened with internment," Ink said. The Blackwell School is a very different story, but at the same time, it's coming from the same place, devaluing people who are different from the people in power. Ink says, "I just believe very, very strongly in the power of storytelling and people being able to claim their stories." When she speaks about the past being buried, there's one literal instance that many Blackwell students recall. The application for the National Register includes a narrative about a 1954 incident at Blackwell where students buried Mr. Spanish. A seventh grade class was instructed to write, "I will not speak Spanish," on paper scraps, place them in a coffin, and during a school-wide gathering around the flagpole, bury the box in a ceremony. The teacher later explained her intention was to help students learn English and lose their accent. After the burial, students were paddled for their language transgressions. As Maggie Marquez recounted to the Big Bend Sentinel in 2007, the school's principal paddled the young student after she told her classmates, "Nadia, me va quitar mi español. No pueden hacernos esto. No one's going to take away my Spanish. They can't do that to us." Even some of our grandkids didn't even know about it. Some of the students' grandkids, Salgado says about Blackwell and its history, "I've mentioned it to my grandkids. I'm proud of it. It happened, and it's part of history. By not mentioning it, it's not going to go away. It happened." Recently, Blackwell has initiated an effort to bring today's Marfa students into the space to educate them on Marfa's past. Compiled over 3 years, the application to the National Register included narratives from former students and teachers, which it relied on heavily since, according to Inc., the school district burned the Blackwell records in the 1950s. Along with oral histories, the application detailed a historic structure report of the two remaining Blackwell school buildings. The other structures were destroyed to make way for low-income housing after the school's closure. It even answered one long-standing mystery: when the Blackwell School was actually built. Late local historian Lon Taylor had volunteered time doing deed research for the Blackwell School Alliance, uncovering documents that disputed a long-running oral history that Blackwell was built in the 1880s. The deed revealed the founder of Marfa, John M. Dean, sold the Blackwell land to the county in 1909, and construction began immediately after. The physical building is crucial to its placement on the register. Wilson says it is representative of that face of Marfa that we might not see. It's the face of the Marfa community and is still, symbolically, an important place for that community. Though segregated Hispanic schools were prolific across the Texas-Mexico border, few remain standing, much less in their near-original condition. Blackwell's addition to the National Register of Historic Places opens the school up for tax credits to complete renovations and improvements. It also broadens grant opportunities, which the Alliance could use to implement more exhibits in the space and toward their goal of hiring an executive director this year. The Permian Basin Area Foundation and its Tillipah Public History Fund have already contributed $25,000 toward the position's salary. Wilson, the historian from the Texas Historical Commission, says Blackwell is likely the only segregated Hispanic school on the register in Texas. In Alpine, the segregated Centennial School is an office building. In Marathon, the Hispanic schoolhouse is eroding into the ground. Fort Davis building is gone. Blackwell's endurance is key to preserving the history of Texas segregated Hispanic border schools. In 2006, a group of alumni formed the Blackwell School Alliance and fundraised to repair the building's exterior. Today, visitors can explore the schoolhouse during open hours and learn more of its history. What we're understanding now is that we preserve an incredibly authentic physical space that is the portal to connecting to a much bigger story, Inc. says. The ongoing American conversation around identity and othering and all of those other things that we really have both the obligation and the opportunity to speak to. Part of it is that nobody else is doing it. Blackwell presents the real history of Marfa, the Hispanic history of Marfa, which might not be as well known as the contemporary art history that's going on in Marfa right now, Wilson explains. This nomination illuminates this history, about a popular, well-known city that a lot of people don't know unless you grew up there and lived there. When Wilson mentions location as a unique factor in the Blackwell application, she's speaking about the booming tourism and art scene that a tiny remote town in West Texas somehow came to possess. Wilson says the outsider's perspective of Marfa today differs from what Blackwell is presenting. The designation itself tells the rest of the nation this place is important, the historian says. It has critical importance and meaning to people who grew up and lived there, who made friends, whose family lived there. It's more than just a school. It's an integral part of the Hispanic community's culture and their past. It's not just a segregated story. It's about that community, their family and friends, and all the opportunities the school gave them. Salgado credits the Blackwell Block Party as one of the greatest things that happened at the school because it brought all of the people of Marfa together, and it gave us a chance to show the people of Marfa that we are in this together, Salgado says of the yearly event. That's the idea of being one community together. Together we can do a lot of things. The Block Party is going to grow in 2020. Along with the April 25th celebration, a series of meetings on April 23rd and 24th will gather community stakeholders to address conflicts and seek resolution through a series of gatherings. These will be facilitated public meetings where the Alliance plans to listen, brainstorm, and receive input. Now we're on the National Register. What do we do with that, and what do people want to see happen here? Inc. says. How do we make sure all of the voices are heard, the divergent, challenging voices? Inc. asks. Let's hold space for that, too, because if this is going to work, it's going to require all the support of all of Marfa, and I think there's hope for that. Burying our past has not healed our community, Inc. says. If there is a way that the Blackwell School can be a place to really hold space for all the emotions and conversations, that would be a dream come true, if that could somehow lead to some healing and dialogue. I do think that having this designation of the National Register is one step toward claiming our authority on being that place, she says. We have our Texas landmark, but for every one of these designations we get, it is like someone saying, that is really important to our understanding of American history. And hopefully people are more comfortable talking about it. Separated man is in no hurry to file for divorce. Dear Abby, I have been dating my boyfriend for almost a year. I love him, and we have an undeniable connection I have never had with anyone else. The problem is, he's separated but not yet divorced from his wife. I have a hard time moving forward in the relationship and meeting his family when he hasn't filed for divorce. He says he's going to file, and he doesn't seem to think it's a big deal, but meeting his son and family members under these circumstances makes me uncomfortable. It's almost like this is a test run to see if I'll fit the part before he finalizes everything. He and his wife have been separated for only a year, and I'm ready to start a family. Our timing seems off, but he treats me so well it's hard to let him go. Should I put our relationship on hold until he finalizes his divorce? Or will he resent me because I'm not being supportive? What if his separation is only temporary and he's just having fun? Could I be a side chick? Having doubts in California. Dear Having Doubts, you are asking intelligent questions. You have been supportive for quite some time now. Have the two of you actually discussed getting married and starting a family? If you haven't, you should. So you have some idea of whether his separation is temporary and what a realistic time frame would be. Once you know what that is, It couldn't hurt to meet his son and his family, if only to see how they react to you. As for whether you could be this man's side chick, it depends on how long you plan to remain in a holding pattern, waiting for him to do something concrete. Some women wait for years only to have things not work out as they had hoped. Dear Abby, my sister, Dana, spent decades taking care of our disabled sister, which meant Dana and her family sacrificing greatly to provide for her care. The rest of us siblings live out of town and shared none of the responsibility. Our disabled sister passed away recently, leaving an estate that is now in probate. I suggested to my other siblings that before the estate is divided equally, we should set aside enough for Dana and her husband to take a long overdue and well-deserved vacation. It's something I know Dana has been longing for, but they won't hear of it. I can't believe my siblings are acting this way. They say Dana can take a vacation on what she inherits, but that's not the point. While we all had free weekends and could take vacations, Dana was extremely limited because our disabled sister couldn't travel and needed a caregiver. How do I change my siblings' view? Disappointed brother. Dear brother, your sentiments are laudable, but there is no way to force your greedy siblings into doing anything for Dana. It appears your disabled sister died without a will, which could have ensured that Dana was repaid for her efforts. Your letter highlights the importance of putting last wishes in writing, preferably with the assistance of an attorney. I cannot emphasize this strongly enough. Dear Abby, write Dear Abby at www.dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069. Her column is distributed by Universal Press Syndicate. MSS Connections. Volunteer Opportunities. These select area volunteer opportunities are provided by MSS Connections, a program of MSS made possible by the Warren Charitable Foundation. This free service connects you to nonprofits in Midland County. Find new ways to connect and plug in with your community at mssconnections.org. Every year, the Midland YMCA puts on a family-friendly dance so families can dress up, dance, and have fun. The Y needs volunteers for the cupcake decorating and refreshment tables, craft area, to take tickets at the door, and clean up at the end of the night. It's a chance to get fancy, in comfy shoes, and have a great time supporting local families. This event is from 6:30 to 10 p.m. February 8th. Volunteers are also needed 1 to 4 p.m. to help decorate the downstairs gym. The West Texas Recording Library needs volunteers to read daily newspapers and other written media. Dedicated to improving the lives of people who cannot access the printed word, the Recording Library of West Texas offers audio versions of different forms of media to the visually impaired. From audiobooks and audio version magazines to audio version newspapers and newsletters, we help our community stay connected and better their lives. Volunteers must be over 16 and able to dedicate a minimum of 2 hours a week on your own schedule. Legacy Scholar and SIP hours are available. The Midland Chamber of Commerce needs people to help in its office. Individuals provide support for the office, front desk help, answering phones, organizing supplies, and other various projects, depending on the time of year. Specific events and other duties as assigned. The position helps us further the mission of the Chamber of Commerce to support our members in Midland. Individuals will be interacting with members, business owners, various other volunteers, and the general public. Good people skills necessary, and office experience is a plus. Individual must be a self-starter and able to work with various individuals to accomplish a common goal. Prospective volunteers will be interviewed. The Alzheimer's Association of Midland has ongoing needs for volunteers for various events throughout the year. Volunteers are periodically needed to help set up, clean up, and perform various other tasks during events, such as its Walks for Awareness, the Education Conference, and advocacy meetings. Minimum age is 15, and opportunities are eligible for legacy scholarship hours. Midland County Public Library needs Therapy Dogs International volunteers as part of its Dog Tales program. This program gives children a chance to come in and work on their reading and language skills by reading aloud to a therapy dog. Please only sign up if you are registered with Therapy Dogs International. Volunteers age 18 and older must undergo a background check. Acceptance makes peace and happiness possible. Acceptance is one of the greatest strengths. It is an inner power that protects us from suffering and enables us to give strength to others in their time of need. It's a wonderful example to show in our families, work environments, and circle of friends, because it shows how to be a peaceful person in distressing and challenging circumstances. How can we increase this strength of acceptance so that we can take whatever life throws at us and to transform it into something good? If we have a clear reason for practicing acceptance and appreciate its value, then we can happily accept whatever comes our way. One good reason is that without acceptance, we are vulnerable to losing our peace and happiness. As the Buddhist master and my teacher, Geshe Kelsang Gyatso, writes in the book Bodhisattva Vow, we need to cultivate patience even if we don't have any interest in spiritual development, because without it, we remain vulnerable to anxiety, frustration, and disquiet. That's a good reason. Patience is a peace of mind preservation technique. It's important to know that patient acceptance is not a weakness. In the battle with anger, acceptance is not losing, it's winning. There's no inner strength in following the emotional habit of anger. It is far stronger to train the mind. By gaining a clarity and spaciousness of mind to see the habitual thoughts that cause us suffering, we can begin to change those thoughts. We can then train our mind to transform any difficulty into something good, such as compassion. By recalling that others experience far greater suffering than we do, we can cause our good heart to grow. This compassion is the essence of the Buddhist spiritual path. Gradually, we will possess a fearless heart with the confidence and courage of compassion. This inner strength brings us and others true protection. Through contemplating these things, we can develop a sincere and strong intention to patiently accept and transform life's challenges into spiritual growth. To explore these ideas in greater depth, Universalist Unitarian Church of Midland will host my free public talk, The Power of Intention, 6:30 to 8 p.m. on January 24th at 3301 Neely Avenue. People of all religions and philosophical persuasions are warmly welcomed. Gen Kelsang Minla is an American Buddhist monk and the resident teacher of the Kadampa Meditation Center, Texas, in Dallas. Gen Kelsang Minla, Kadampa Meditation Center, Texas. Tech and religious text come together at Museum Lecture by Rich Lopez, JRLOPEZ at MRT.com. Joe Weeks, co-pastor of Connection Christian Church, has a specifically keen interest in biblical manuscripts. When asked to do a lecture at the Ella Noel Art Museum in conjunction with its Sacred Scripts, 1,000 Years of Religious Texts exhibition, he was all in. That leads to Week's lecture, Text and Technology, The impact of technological advancement on the production of religious texts. On Thursday, with a look at how new inventions impacted tradition. This has been a long-standing interest of mine. I'm not just a text scholar, but also a theologian, a minister, and there's this profound interconnectedness between tech and sacred texts and how they relate to each other, he said. The exhibition itself features a variety of religious manuscripts and texts from all faiths, including the Torah, the Quran, the Bible, and Ramayana. In his presentation, Weeks will focus on three areas where the modern age affected the public's intake of their faiths. Well, before anything, there was writing, and then the use of papyrus and parchment, which transformed how communications were transmitted, he said. But around the time of the New Testament, the Codex was born, which is essentially a bound book instead of scrolls. But text was primarily still handwritten until about 1500, when perhaps the biggest innovation was created. I'll spend most of my time talking about the printing press. Before, no two copies of anything were identical, where words and letters got changed around. The press enabled what a text could be, he said. This aspect made it economically possible for text to be available for the masses. Weeks' final point is the use of digital technology in relation to the Bible or other sacred books. With smartphones and computers, people can engage with such information a lot easier and faster. In his presentation, Weeks will refer to specific pieces in the exhibition, such as the King James First edition, and the Erasmus Greek New Testament, which were landmarks in both religious texts and mass production. Tradition in religion, however, is steadfast. Can, or should, a phone be as significant a resource over or alongside the book? There is an iconography that happens. We make an idol out of this physical element. You would never set your glass of tea on it because it's this presence of God, he said. Electronic text completely undermines that. I think religious leaders struggle with this, but I also believe we need to stop making an icon out of the Bible. It's okay to open it and mark it up and dog-ear a page. No one is going to get struck down. But he does have consideration for the tradition of a physical book. In more ceremonious ways, he appreciates the idea of reading out of a huge printed Bible at the pulpit for its reverence over reading off a phone or sheet. Weeks will let his audience be the judge. For those interested in how faith communities regard their sacred texts, this is a good opportunity to learn about that, he said. And if nothing else, come see the exhibit. It's a fantastic one they have curated. If you go, text and technology, the impact of technological advancement on the production of religious texts by Joe Weeks of Connection Christian Church, 6:30 p.m. Thursday, Ellen Noel Art Museum, 4909 East University Boulevard, Odessa, free. noelartmuseum.org. Marathon Chamber, A Buzz for 2020 by Shauna Graves, contributing writer. Marathon Chamber of Commerce welcomed a new slate of officers at its first meeting of the year on January 9th. Held at the Community Center, more than 20 residents and business owners attended and participated in a roundtable discussion. Marathon Public Library was lining up its panel of speakers for the year, expanding what started as Marathon History Night. The first of this year's speakers features Alan Vannoy, a print artist, bookbinder, and owner of Cow Dog in Alpine. The series kicks off at the library at 6:30 p.m. Saturday, January 25th, and includes a bookbinding demonstration. Marathon resident and volunteer deputy registrar Rosalinda Kreis announced She will set up a table near the post office to register people to vote throughout the year, and if anyone has questions about voting, including absentee and mail-in ballots, to find her in town or email her at rocrase@gmail.com. Voting forms are also available at the library and French Company Grocer. The town's active quilting community invited anyone interested to attend its weekly meetup on Wednesdays from noon to 4 p.m. at the Fellowship Hall. All levels of quilters are welcome. "We encourage everyone to come and learn from each other," said member Jody Freeman. One of Marathon's main events, Fiesta de Noche Buena, will revert to being held the first weekend in December. So as not to compete with Alpine events, the celebration was held the second weekend in December during 2019, but the change caused confusion to longtime attendees. Plus, many area ranches fill up with hunters by the middle of December, making it difficult for the hosts of those ranches to attend this traditional event. The first of many 2020 events, a fish fry fundraiser, will take place Saturday, February 8th at 6 p.m. at the Community Center. Plates will include fish and all the trimmings, with live music from Justin Trevino. Donations will go toward improvements at Post Park, including a bandstand and kiddie pool repairs. Chamber bylaws dictate officer term limits, and an election was in order. This was the last meeting for Marathon resident Elaine Berg to preside as president, a role she held for 5 years. "On behalf of all of us, Elaine, you have been spectacular," Treasurer Jane Gallo said. Berg thanked everyone for bringing the chamber to life over the past few years and ended the meeting with a reminder. "The chamber is about doing fun things, putting on parties, and celebrating our town," she said. Officers for 2020 include owner of the historic Bloss Payne House, Linda Berenick, as president, Gage Hotel general manager Carol Peterson as vice president, Marathon resident Kim Klein as secretary, co-owner of Main Street Shop Jane Gallo as treasurer, and Marathon resident Ingrid Murphy as corresponding secretary. Marathon Chamber of Commerce meets quarterly, with the next meeting scheduled for April 9th.
That's all for today's Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American, a production of the Recording Library of West Texas. You can also hear this program anytime online at recordinglibrary.org or by calling the telephone reader at 432-617-5555.